Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
We still got some residuals from ACC kickoff, Lauren. The 2021 preseason All-ACC football team and the preseason player of the year were announced.
Yes.
Surprising nobody.
Zero people, yeah.
Sam Howell was named the preseason player of the year with 114 of those votes. Derek King of Miami got 11 votes. And then after that, it's just, I don't know, local people expecting big things. I commend Georgia Tech folks because they threw a couple of votes for one of their players in the same way that they also had voted Georgia Tech to win the league too, which is surprising.
You know what? It may not be fair to assume that it's a Georgia Tech person.
I'm going
to
assume that.
I also think it could be someone who understands that the Coastal rarely makes sense and is trying to think outside the box. The player may be a different story, right? Although I guess if you think they're winning the league, you probably think they have the player of the league.
They're going to have
player
somebody,
of the
year.
But yeah. I do think it could potentially just be somebody that wants to think outside the box and knows that the Coastal is always weird.
The two things that I've taken away out of the residuals of ACC kickoff last week have a lot to do with how we talk about the teams here locally, respectively, North Carolina and NC State. It's clear that this season is I don't want to say make or break, but this is a big year for North Carolina.
Yes.
Sam Howell, Mack Brown has not been shy about the fact that this is going to be it for Sam Howell. He's going to go to the NFL, so you better ride this thing out. Enjoy the journey with Sam Howell. With no Trevor Lawrence, life after Trevor Lawrence, there's a vacuum of who the top QB is, the guy who's going to get the most amount of attention. We don't know anything about DJ Uiagalelei. I believe that's how you pronounce it. I'm going to get that right by the start of the season.
You got it right.
Got it right. Good. Yeah. We don't know much about DJ other than when you see him in person, you go, damn, that dude plays quarterback. But Sam Howell is now occupying that space that Trevor Lawrence occupied in the ACC. He's going to occupy that space when we talk about ACC football on the national level, when you tune into ESPN and all that kind of stuff. He is going to be the face of the ACC and what the Tar Heels could do. Whether or not they live up to those expectations is another matter. It's going to be a fascinating year for UNC. And as we've discussed, their schedule, not the easiest thing. They got some tricky spots, some tricky spots for them. And we saw last year where they got caught up in some tricky games, like Florida State being the prime example. So, I mean, they could very well start the year. I believe they start at Virginia Tech.
Yes.
That's not a given. Given the history between the two schools,
I think Georgia State is week two at home, I believe, and then week three, I think, is at home against Virginia, which, as we know, Virginia has been an issue. for them, their defense is tricky, and they return a decent amount as well. So that's certainly not a given either.
The other thing that I find interesting coming out of the ACC media days, and we're seeing some of it play out now. I was wrong about the rest of the conference and how they view NC State. Around here, my argument was, around here, because we're familiar with what they did last year in a weird season, and people are high on Devin Leary taking that next step, provided he can stay on the field.
Right.
Right. We've seen a small sample size out of Devin Leary. I still don't know if it's a given, but there's an expectation that, based on that limited sample size, he can take that next step. So we get all that stuff. I was of the opinion that locally NC State was a known commodity. Depth, should expect a pretty good season. I did not think, because of all the attention North Carolina's getting and all the focal points that Clemson gets post-Trevor Lawrence, that State would get some attention. I'm wrong about that, because they got players showing up on the All-ACC team.
Oh, yeah.
They got some first-place votes. They got one first-place vote. It wasn't me.
By the way, whoever voted them to win the league did not. I pick a State player for player of the year. So I thought that was interesting.
That's very, 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 very strange. And a lot of people picked them. They're going to, based on the voting totals, they're picked to finish second in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of it is, this is, in my opinion, oh boy, here we go.
Okay.
Pray for my mentions already. But I do think this. I think this year you could make the case that the Coastal is the more challenging division. I know Clemson's in the other one. I understand that's a big roadblock, right? But Syracuse has just really hit the skids. Wake Forest is the wild card for me, right? We just don't really know what to for sure what to think of Wake Forest. But Louisville is coming off a disappointing year. Wake Forest can be good, but they have a definitive ceiling. So really, you're looking at Boston College and NC State for that third spot. I mean, there's really not anybody else in the conversation.
No, there's not. You're right. And that's why I think that's what I got wrong. I thought the respect for Dave Clawson and what he's built at Wake Forest might get them a little bit more run.
They actually got disrespected.
They actually got disrespected. I was actually surprised the way people were looking
at Wake
Forest.
They're already the team that I think Inside Carolina's Greg Barnes broke this down. I believe they're the team that gets wrong, like the media gets wrong in a good way for Wake Forest in terms of like overperforming expectations the most often.
Yeah, that would make sense. You'd think by now people would understand
Dave
Clawson's good for it, right?
Nope.
He's good for some wins, okay?
Nope.
So, regardless, and with Boston College, while they were spunky last season, I think maybe the longevity of Dave Doran at NC State and the depth that they got coming back was giving NC State the benefit of the doubt. So, some things that I understood were going to happen, some things that I misread coming out of ACC kickoff, including the way people look at NC State. Speaking of the ACC, we still have some residuals regarding conference realignment. The letter was sent today by Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, and it reads like a terrible promposal.
It's like a Dear John letter or something. Is that even a reference people still use?
I don't even know.
Probably not.
Probably not. But essentially, it's a joint letter. Dear Commissioner Sankey, that's the commissioner of the SEC, the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas.
Oh, okay.
Request invitations for membership to the SEC starting on July 1, 2025. We believe there would be mutual benefit to the universities on the one hand, and the SEC on the other hand, for the universities to become members of the SEC. We look forward to the prospect of discussions regarding this matter.
Oh, it's like we're crushing on you. We're
hey, do you
we
like,
see you. Do you see us?
Do you see us? So yeah. what do we do here? You want to meet for coffee?
Jeez.
Something? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if you saw the stat. I think it was Stuart Mandel that broke this down when they were looking at viewership for the Big 12, that Oklahoma and Texas games, I think they averaged like around 3 and 3.2 each. I don't remember which was which. And the rest of the Big 12, when neither of those teams was involved, was averaging 800,000.
Oh, jeez.
So like when you break it down that way, it's pretty wild. And it does make a little bit more sense, I think.
Now, the general attitude with the SEC going to Super League status with the additions of Texas and Oklahoma, all right, well, what does the ACC do? And my argument has been the ACC doesn't really do anything.
No.
You have Notre Dame.
What?
You do your damnedest to try to convince Notre Dame to join full-time as the 15th member, and you stay at 15 because there's really nobody else. It's not West Virginia.
No.
It's not Cincinnati. There's
like,
no
just,
other North Carolina school.
I was going to say, let me reiterate those numbers again in case y'all didn't hear them.
Yes.
West Virginia is included in that group of other teams that averages 800,000.
This is about the brands, and there's only one brand still out there unless you get into some sort of scheduling alliance with the Pac-12.
That's what or the Big Ten, right? Like that's the only thing that I can think of that could slow some of this is if the other three unite and they're like, no, like
the only
screw
reason
this, we're not doing this.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying. However, I don't see the Big Ten trying to partner. I see the Big Ten just scooping up the remnants of what's left of the Big 12 to add to what they already have and to give partnerships with teams they already have. The ACC and the Pac-12 are the two going, really, there's nothing else we can add here, guys, but that doesn't mean we can't try to create and pool things together for more money down the line.
All I'm saying is I'm talking to the other conference commissioners, and while like I'm not super trustworthy of those commissioners for good reason, I'm still talking to them and trying to see, like, is there something we can do here? Is there some way we could maybe even pool our own resources and become some mega conference of our own to compete? Because right now, the SEC is going to be doubling up the ACC at least, and pretty much everybody else at this point. And that's going to change fundamentally the course of college athletics.
So there's another option, and this is something that Jay Billis of ESPN brought up during a SportsCenter hit talking about what's next. I mean, I say that I present this lightly in the sense like there's another option. I don't think this is an option. I don't quite. I mean, I love Jay Billis, but sometimes it's like Jay, read the room. Here's his suggestion for the ACC going forward.
If you're in this business now, you're going to have to start thinking bigger. Greg Sankey and the SEC are certainly doing that. If I were commissioner of the ACC, one thing I'd be thinking about is approaching the SEC and saying, look at all the natural rivalries we have interconference. Why don't we start thinking about a merger? Because that's what the SEC is going to become. It's going to become the NFL, a junior NFL and junior NBA. And there's no reason why the ACC shouldn't jump in there and take advantage of those natural rivalries and markets. And if I were Jim Phillips, I'd be ringing Greg Sankey's phone saying, how about a merger?
No.
Well, they're not going to do that for a lot of reasons.
No, it's not a merger. It would be an acquisition. I mean, if we want to
that's true.
If I want to go full Colin Cowherd on this one, like this reminds me a lot of when Apple decides to go and buy somebody. I mean, that's what that would be.
Because here's the thing, everybody has to remember, and I keep telling this to people because I've been texted about some pretty wild rumors know that are floating around, and I'm like, okay, two things you have to understand. One, when it comes to the ACC's teams, they would have to be getting a deal that would pay them way more than they would owe the ACC in order to leave it.
Yeah.
Like, to make that financially, because it's till 2036, and the ACC's not going to give anybody a break for the grant of rights.
Real quick on that. So the grant of rights is this thing. It's essentially the glue that keeps all of the schools together within the conference. The ACC learned a lesson from when Maryland left to go to the Big Ten. It was manageable for Maryland to leave.
Yes.
And get the money sort of floated to them, and then eventually they were made whole by the Big Ten.
The grant of rights was not that punitive.
It wasn't that punitive.
Yeah.
And then in order to have stability, they increased the penalties of the grant of rights if you were to get out of it. And then when you think of it like a coaching buyout, right?
Yes.
Between now and 2036, in order to get out of it's a long time. B, it's a lot of freaking money.
Yes.
Right?
And like even you'd have to make a really lot of money in order to make that work in any meaningful way.
And it's just not quite there yet. There's a reason why this SEC thing is happening with Texas and Oklahoma
now. It's because theirs is about to run out.
Because theirs is running out in 2025. This actually gets to something that Jillio brought up yesterday. Jillio's on vacation today. Jillio talked to a source that used to be in the ACC. And he asked him a question. Like, is it fair to criticize the ACC for kind of being asleep when all this was going on? And the source said, no, it's actually not fair to criticize because the ACC was well aware of where things go back in 2012 when they were seeing what was going on. And according to that source, the ACC did reach out to Texas and Oklahoma and said, look, guys, if you're thinking about jumping ship, what about us? And the understanding was that Texas and Oklahoma said, hey, thanks for the heads up, but not right now.
Right.
Clearly, they had interest in the SEC for a lot of reasons, including how football matters, especially, and it just means more, Lauren. So this story is not over, because the story does not end in 2025 when the SEC acquires Texas and Oklahoma, because there are still some ramifications for the ACC going forward that we could be headed toward. I mean, I almost wish we just ripped the Band-Aid off and get to the 32-team Super Conference.
I know. That's where I am right now. I'm just like, do what y'all have to do then.
Some shocking news out of the Olympics today. Simone Biles, gymnast, the GOAT, withdrew. And Team USA had to rally from that withdrawal and got a silver, while whatever you call the Russian athletes, Rock Nation, that's what it shows up on, right? Like,
that'll show up.
Russian Olympic Committee, right? Isn't that what it is? We're not here representing Russia, but throw your diamonds in the sky if you got to feel the vibe. I believe that's what they're doing with Rock Nation.
Yes.
Okay, got it. So Simone Biles, the initial thought was that she was hurt.
Yeah.
And that's why she had to withdraw. But that's actually not what is going on. She addressed the media after the fact, saying that thankfully there was no injury. She just had to take a step back.
I'm no injury, thankfully, and that's why I took a
step back because I didn't want to do something silly out there and get injured. So I thought it was best if these girls took over and did the rest of the job, which they absolutely did. They're Olympic silver medalists now, and they should be really proud of themselves for how well they did last minute having to go in. And it's been really stressful, this Olympic Games. I think just as a whole, not having an audience, there are a lot of different variables going into it. It's been a long week. It's been a long Olympic process. It's been a long year. So just a lot of different variables, and I think we're just a little bit too stressed out. But we should be out here having fun, and sometimes that's not the case.
That was Simone Biles after she withdrew from the team competition where Team USA rallied and got a silver.
I've got to say, I'm a bit of a gymnastics nerd during the Summer Olympics. It's the only time I pay attention to it,
sure.
Admittedly.
I think that's most of us, Lauren. You're not really...
But suddenly I'm like, excuse me, that should be more of a deduction. That was a wobble on that beam. That was not just getting your balance. Yeah, I still think Jordan Childs, I believe, got too low a score on beat, but whatever. I've been watching. I watched some of the qualifying rounds too with Simone, and I saw her first vault today, and she has not looked right to me since she's been competing in Tokyo. It just hasn't looked, and they've commented on it. They're like, you know, for any other athlete, this is fine, but for Simone, like, we know what she's capable of, and it's just, it wasn't quite right. And I think for her, from the way I understand it, that vault and the way she landed on it, it was just kind of tricky, and it looked like she kind of lost control of herself a little bit. Mm-hmm. She's got some really difficult elements in her routines, really challenging things, and I think she talked about this some too, she just doesn't trust her body right now because of where her mind is, and that I think is something that far too many of us probably can relate to in some way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes your mental side of things can take over physically, and that's where she's at.
As Marshawn Lynch once said, you gotta
take care of your mentals.
Take care of your mentals.
That's
and
facts.
That's what Simone Biles was alluding to when she said her mentals were just not there.
Today has been really stressful. We had a workout this morning. It went okay. And then just that 5.5 hour wait or something, I was just like shaking, could barely nap. I've just never felt like this going into a competition before. And I tried to go out here and have fun and warm up in the back, went a little bit better. But then once I came out here, I was like, no, mental is not there. So I just need to let the girls do it and focus on myself.
So, again, that was Simone Biles after she withdrew today. Team USA, the women's gymnastics, finishes with a team silver behind the Russian Olympic Committee. Now, I will admit that I'm not exactly immersed in gymnast news.
Yeah.
But I do know Simone Biles is one of those Olympic athletes, much like Katie Ledecky, where you go, oh, is she on tonight? All right, I'll watch. See, like, with Katie Ledecky's out there about to crush it in the pool.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to watch, okay? There's always these levels of athletes, both men and women, where it transcends whether you even know anything about the sport or not.
Right.
And Simone Biles was the type of gymnast that, my understanding, she was pulling off stuff nobody else could pull off. Like,
yes.
Really difficult routines.
Very difficult. They have moves named after her because no one else has ever done them.
Sure. So there's already pressure in and of itself to do those types of things, take it to a level that nobody else has been able to take it to. So you already got that pressure on yourself.
Yeah, and all week long, everybody's been talking about the fact that, oh, you know, Russia's really strong,
yes.
And, you know, they're going to need every point they can get, Team USA, which, you know, to me, parenthetically means you also have to have Simone performing at her best.
And that's actually what I was going to get to. Again, my understanding is that Team USA's entire team strategy was the Will Smith strategy from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Pass it to Will. It was the Teen Wolf strategy. Okay, give it to Michael J. Fox and let him cook, and he'll overcome. You put me,
and I mean,
you,
I get it,
Rand and Gillio with Teen Wolf, chances are we're probably going to win a basketball game.
And I get it.
Yeah, so they basically are counting on Simone Biles going to be able to do all the things that she's able to do, and it'll elevate everybody else. So, which means that the fact that the U.S. women finished with the silver and that they rallied,
dude,
it's pretty impressive.
They competed their butts off. Like, I was so proud watching them because that couldn't have been easy to go through all of that. And you're worried about your friend and everything else, too, on top of it. And they just, I mean, they all stepped up. Yeah, they made some mistakes here and there, obviously. But, like, they just stepped up and they really performed well.
And then the other part of that is we need to understand the incredible amount of pressure that is put on the athletes and what we ask of them to perform. And if they don't have it, you got to respect the fact that they just don't have it.
I also think it's important to mention, because I've when I saw this was trending, I saw red.
Yeah.
That people are comparing Carrie Strug and what Carrie Strug did in the 96 Olympics, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When
yeah.
she landed and, like, basically, you know, she hurt her ankle very badly and still did her next vault to get the gold or whatever. Okay, okay, cool. That's, you can be a little bit ignorant about mental health and make that comparison, and that's all well and good. Except for the fact that if you watch that footage closely, you might notice a team doctor carrying her off named Larry Nassar. Mm-hmm. Do you remember him?
Yes.
You heard of him?
Yeah.
He also hurt Simone Biles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was one of the many girls and women that he assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that she's talked about openly being very difficult for her to come to terms with. I think she really was in denial about it and kind of pushed it to the side for a long time before she could kind of deal with it. And dealing with trauma, man, it's a tricky thing. Like, this is something that it's not as simple as, like, oh, she's, you know, feeling a little down or something or feeling some pressure. Like, she also has dealt with a literal trauma.
Yeah.
And the way people react to those types of things is complex. She even said that one of the reasons she was still even competing and still on Team USA was so that they felt like they have one of his victims on the team and they have more responsibility towards making it right.
May I suggest, when it comes to matters like this, including Naomi Osaka losing in straight sets in the Olympic tennis tournament, and that her actions, not wanting to speak to the media, talking about mental health and things like that, there is, sometimes I think we use mental health as a catch-all for a lot of things, but oftentimes this is just straight-up burnout.
Yeah.
From all the things that are expected of you. And I
yes.
think I do classify burnout as something different. I'm not a doctor here, but I do think burnout is different. Because with burnout, it's not about, like, a healthy work environment. It's the fact that you just can't work anymore beyond what you've already been doing, yet more is expected of you. And I think that's what we see unfold sometimes with sports. So the problem that we get into is that when something like this happens, we're also kind of on social media too while this is happening. And there is just a lot of bad faith arguments out there, because let's look at the consistency here on the people that want to dunk on the Olympic athletes. Let's look at the consistency. Sha'Carri Richardson, runner, track and field. She gets a ban because she's coping and she tests positive for marijuana. Separate conversation as to whether or not she even tests for marijuana, but that's what it was, right? There was no grace given to her whatsoever.
Right.
None. We might give that to somebody else. Didn't give it to her. Naomi Osaka with not wanting to talk to the media, mental health. She loses in straight sets. No grace given to her. Basically, people dunking on her. Okay? And then with Simone Biles. Again, social media. What are people doing?
Yeah.
Comparing it to other people who powered through or this or that. You let the team down, yada, yada, yada. Again, no grace given. What's the consistency between those three? It's black women.
Mm-hmm.
This is just what we do.
Facts.
It's unfortunate. It's gross.
Yeah,
but this is what we do.
We did it, you know, with black men when we've seen, you know, NBA players or whoever speak out about their own mental health issues.
So we don't look at this objectively because we don't really look at these particular athletes, specifically black women, and give them any benefit of the doubt whatsoever. I wish that would change. All I can really do is point it out and help people understand we put athletes and performers in general in an incredibly intense situation, and sometimes they got to do what's right for them in the same way that you would feel what has to be done that's right for you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's connected to physical health, too.
Yes.
Because if you don't trust yourself in the air, you could hurt yourself very badly.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
That's what Simone Biles said. If I'm not feeling it, I could do something, as she put it, silly out there.
Yeah.
And
because
you're going to make matters worse.
Her elements are all very difficult,
yep.
And if she gets one little thing wrong, and she's been kind of just here and there getting little things wrong all week.
Yeah. Nicole Auerbach, The Athletic. She's joining us now here on the OG on the Heiser Automotive Group Hotline. Nicole, how are you?
I am hanging in there. Thought it would be a slower time in the calendar, and it is not.
It's like it's like Godfather Part 3. You know, every time you think you're out, realignment pulls you back in. So here we are. And I am curious, because I know you spend a lot of time with the Big Ten. What do they do with how do they counter what the SEC is doing?
Well, I don't think they have to do anything, to be honest. I think the ACC and the Big Ten are both in positions where, if you look at the leftover Big 12 schools, I don't know if you see anyone who adds value to the tune of what it needs to be. You know, if you think about the Big Ten and their most recent payouts in a non-pandemic year, it was like $55 million per school. I mean, who are you going to add that's going to bring $55 million per year to your value? Because you got to divide it by an extra body. So, you know, that's really what the question is for anyone trying to add right now is, you know, last go around, this was about markets and it was about getting in, you know, the Big Ten Network, getting in cable packages in New York, New Jersey, right? Like, that's not what this one's about. And, you know, you got to add only if it makes sense. And I think the ACC is in a really similar boat. Obviously, the ACC, if they add someone, they're also able to renegotiate their media rights deals. And they're, you know, those schools are about to get lapped by everybody else who's got negotiations coming up. So, you know, there's some value in that. But the Big Ten really doesn't need to do anything. I think the only schools the Big Ten should be interested in adding are already in the ACC or the Pac-12.
The question I have, though, Nicole, is that, you know, there have been all this speculation about, oh, where is Team X going to go? Is the ACC going to go after Team Y? And it's like you said, yeah, you don't want to cut too much into your pie. But is there really a team out there besides Notre Dame that they could even add, or a collection of teams that would increase everybody's payout enough to make it worth it?
I mean, there are just very few schools that are of that level. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma, certainly as a package, is that level. Like, that's a pair that the Big Ten would have wanted to add, the ACC would have wanted to add, the Pac-12 would have wanted to add, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's just very few schools like that. And that's why Notre Dame is everyone's white whale, right? Like, I mean, it's not common. And, you know, it's like USC, right? Like, there's just very few schools that are of that value. Now that media rights deals are what they are, you got to think about who can you add that A, will bring enough revenue, but also in an era of increased streaming, like, who are people going to pay to watch? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Who are people going to want to see Michigan play, right? Like, it's not Kansas in football.
No, absolutely not. No. Nicole Auerbach joining us from The Athletic here on The OG alongside Lauren Brownlow. I'm Joe Ovius. Julio is out today. He'll be back tomorrow. This is Sports Talk Radio, Nicole, so I feel like can you indulge some conspiracy theories?
All right, hit me.
Okay. Was the College Football Playoff Committee snowed by Jack Swarbrick, the AD at Notre Dame, and Greg Sankey of the SEC for expanding the playoff to 12? Because these are the two biggest winners now, considering what was going on. We know enough now about Texas and Oklahoma and an incentive to join the SEC in an expanded college football playoff field where you could absorb more losses while you're in that conference. Meanwhile, and I don't understand this, and maybe you can help understand, the ACC and other conferences continue to put Notre Dame in a position to make decisions that benefit them only. So I feel like this was a lot more going on behind the scenes than we ever anticipated.
It is. I definitely look back on things that were said in the last 2 months about playoff expansion from people who knew this was happening, a.k.a. Greg Sankey.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely interesting. I think, you know, when you had Jack Swarbrick come out of that working group and basically say that they've never really been happier to be independent, you know, like, it was great. The 1 year deal in the ACC was great, but like, they're totally fine with sacrificing a first round bye, with sacrificing not ever getting a 1-4 seed in the expanded playoff. If they're cool with that because they can still access the playoff without being in a conference, then what on earth would be the incentive to join a conference, right? Like, the impetus to force them to change something isn't there.
Yeah.
They're already okay making less money to have their independence. So it's definitely interesting looking back on having him and Greg Sankey on that working group. I keep thinking about Bob Boolsby, the 12th commissioner yeah. being in that group, and Sankey working with him on and off for 2 years on playoff expansion, theoretically for the betterment of college football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Boolsby literally said that, right? It's wild.
Yes. Meanwhile, working to take Texas and Oklahoma.
Well, that's what I was going to ask Nicole kind of is, where do they go from here, right? Like, the pandemic already, I think, sowed a lot of distrust between the conference commissioners because not everybody was on the same page and kind of wanted to do their own thing. Now you have this. Where do they go from here? I mean, they can't exactly pretend that they all have this great relationship now, can they?
No. Again, not that the Power Five commissioners need to work super well together. As we learned last year, it would have been nicer if people were working more in concert with each other and communicating. But you know, this is the SEC being aggressive, right? This is them creating action. And again, we don't know if the ACC, Big Ten, or Pac-12 are going to add anyone. They don't have to. I mean, you could certainly make a case for the Pac-12 to try to get into Texas and to do some stuff out west into the central time zone. But, you know, I do think those three leagues need to kind of probably be pretty united in how they see things, just so that it's not the SEC and everybody else in decision-making. But it's really hard. You have had massive turnover at the presidential level in a lot of these Power Five schools. Mm-hmm. You have three new Power Five commissioners. Obviously, Jim Phillips in the ACC has a lot of experience in college sports, but still very new to the role and, like, you know, being able to kind of act unilaterally, certainly. And it's just a hard time. And I think, you know, you already had this feeling out period of brand new commissioners. I mean, Pac-12 commissioner George Kalapkoff hasn't even been on the job a month yet and is now dealing with all of these things. And everyone's going to have to figure it out. But no, I think there's already, you know, probably some healthy skepticism when people are dealing with other people in college sports. But now it's absolutely distrust and probably some paranoia. And this is like whatever happens in conference realignment hits. It's like you're terrified to be the last one left standing. You don't want to be the only person with inaction when everyone else is acting, right? So it's like we're in that period of time where no one knows, like, do those eight schools in the Big 12, do they stick together? Do they trust each other enough to do that? We don't know yet.
Nicole Auerbach, The Athletic, does great work. We appreciate the time. Nicole, we'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks for having me.
David Teal, ACC insider for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, joining us, and Richmond.com, joining us now on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. David, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. How about you?
Good. So I think people need to understand where exactly the ACC sits financially. Now, the SEC, okay. The SEC and the Big Ten have a lot of money, but do you think people understand just how much more money these two conferences have compared to the ACC, even though they just got a new deal with ESPN not that long ago?
I don't know if people understand, but I can give you just a quick outline. In 2019-20, the Big Ten distributed on average $54.3 million mm-hmm. to each of its members. SEC 45.5, ACC 32.4.
And that's not going to get any better anytime soon, right?
That's going to get markedly worse because the SEC and the Big Ten are about to cash in on new deals with ESPN for the SEC, a deal already announced, and whatever arrangements the Big Ten makes for 2023 and beyond. Now, the ACC numbers, might they improve with ACC network distribution, deal with Comcast? I would think so, mm-hmm. but not enough to make up for what the SEC is about to cash in with, adding the Sooners and the Longhorns.
That Comcast deal that you talk about, there is some thought that this will be knocked out in September ahead of the football season. Comcast has 19 million cable homes that would certainly help the bottom line with subscribers if they can get that clearance, but that remains to be seen, especially in the era of streaming and the combative nature that the cable providers and distributors have with ESPN these days and all the money they want. David Teal joining us, an ACC insider, Richmond Times joining us. Okay, so going forward, you know, we understand the financial rift between the two conferences, the SEC and the ACC specifically. Is there a concern, given the Super League nature of Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC, that an ACC school like, say, Clemson, who doesn't want to be left behind in these types of things, you still got to compete for national championships, money goes a long way, that maybe allegiances to the ACC are a little thin? Or is the grant of rights that the ACC has through 2036 so strong that really Swofford has protected them for the long run here?
I think it's the latter. Now, I have not read the grant of media rights, but my understanding is it is pretty burdensome for anyone who would think about bailing, especially this early in the deal.
David Teal joining us here on the OG. Okay, before we say goodbye, we appreciate the time. Notre Dame. Is it weird to you that Jack Swarbrick, the athletics director at Notre Dame, can kind of gallivant around ACC media days and talk to other ADs like it's no big deal, while at the same time understanding everything that Notre Dame has done has been to benefit them, including the college football playoff, and not necessarily the conference that has helped them out in a lot of different ways?
Well, helped them out in an extra large way last football season. Because obviously, without the ACC, Notre Dame doesn't make the college football playoff and have that kind of avenue. And yes, he was there gallivanting around. He was at John Swofford's retirement soiree on Tuesday, and then Wednesday he made the presentation of the college football playoff proposal to expand to 12 teams. He made that presentation to the ACC's 14 football coaches. I don't believe Brian Kelly was in the room. I mean, how awkward is that?
It's very, as Gillio joked yesterday, Jack Swarbrick pulled a Kaiser Soze on the ACC. And if you've seen that movie, you'll get the reference. But it's I'm still kind of at a loss as to how they allow this to occur. And Notre Dame comes out on top while others are going, oh, wait a minute, did we just not see this coming from a mile away? But that's where we are. David Teal, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, brother. Thanks.
We'll go to the Heister Automotive Group hotline and say hello to Nick Stevens, high school OT. Nick, what's up, man?
How's it going?
Well, good. This is going to be a very educational experience for me and the audience, I think.
Okay.
So let's
Concerning that I'm the one you're talking to then.
Well, I mean, you're the one who's been hanging out in these legislative meetings. Okay, so let's try to understand what's going on here. Let me have this, if I have this right. There was something called House Bill 91. Okay. Mm-hmm. House Bill 91 was originally a bill about students with autism, right?
It was.
Okay. Yeah. But then it was amended, like bills tend to be amended, in the Senate Committee on Education. And it was replaced with language that would dissolve the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. And a commission selected by the governor and both chambers of the NCGA would then set up a governing body for high school sports in the 22-23 school year. My question is, why? What the hell is wrong with the North Carolina High School Athletic Association?
So, as you know, I think I've talked to you about this on here before. There's been an investigation going on for a long time now. Behind the scenes, it's been going on for like 18 plus months.
Okay.
We've known about it since March, that there has been legislative interest in how the NCHSA handles its business, particularly on finances and transparency, that kind of stuff. And it has led to this amended HB 91 and dissolving the association and changing the way high school sports would operate here in North Carolina. The bill hit some of the big points that of concern that these legislators have had, and they've kind of gone down many different rabbit holes over the course of the last several months. Finances is a big one. They have a net worth of about $40 million, a little over $40 million. If people want to see that full breakdown, we actually have a story up on High School ET right now breaking down where every single one of these dollars is. But they have a net worth of about $40 million. They have a large endowment fund that is part of that $40
million. Yeah.
And that's been a point of concern. Not that they've done anything wrong or illegal or nefarious. It's just that they have all this money, and the legislators have said, you know, we've got schools that are struggling financially right now, particularly in a pandemic. Why are you sitting on all that money? And so that's been part of the concern. And the NCHSA has responded and had, you know, explanations for that. But there's other things: transparency, the appeals process, a due process when schools are penalized or students are deemed to be ineligible. The fines that they levy sometimes. Some of the legislators have had issues with that. As this will hit close home for you as a Cardinal Gibbons graduate,
yeah.
But the private schools, the Catholic schools that are in the NCHSA, the four of them, and the charter schools having an advantage over some of the traditional, public schools, those are some of the issues that have come up, and those aren't new issues to those of us who have been in and around high school sports for a while, but it is new that it's being addressed at the legislative level.
Okay. Got that part, but here's my understanding. Nobody likes this. I believe what? Didn't you basically send a survey out to a bunch of ADs across the state, high school ADs across the state? What, like 5% actually are okay with this?
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's going to be part of the challenge for some of the legislators is the people who are on the front lines of high school sports, while many of them have said that they share some of these same concerns, they're not dismissing the fact that they have some of the same questions and concerns. They don't think that dissolving the NCHSA and putting it under a commission that would be appointed by elected partisan officials is the best way to do it. And so we did a survey. There's 427 athletic directors in the NCHSA this coming year. We heard from 230 of them. So it was about a 53-54% response rate. 5.2% said that they supported the bill, and I think it was 86% and some change opposed it. So it's very lopsided, and the NFHS, the National Governing Body for High School Sports, has come out in support of the association, the North Carolina Coaches Association, the Athletic Directors Association, mm-hmm. the Football Coaches Association, the Wrestling, Basketball. I mean, the list goes on and on and on in support of the association. So
right.
The people on the front lines in high school sports are overwhelmingly opposed to the bill itself.
And our legislatures still want to go through with this?
Well, I think that's an open question. You know, there we did learn today that there's going to be a meeting, closed-door meeting tomorrow afternoon between the NCHSAA and some of the legislators who have been leading this charge. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think they still have a lot of concerns, you know, maybe they'll be able to address them without legislation, or maybe it'll be an amended version of this bill that doesn't dissolve the association but changes some of the structure. I have no idea what to expect. To come out of that.
Nick Stevens, high school OT, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovias. Gilio is out today. He'll be back tomorrow. And trying to get an understanding as to why there have been reports that the NCGA wants to dissolve the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. All right, you obviously are way more involved in this than me. You talk to the schools and you talk to administrators. Is there merit to the concerns about the money? Like from my logical brain, I understand why the North Carolina High School Athletic Association has that kind of money. And the endowments, and they have their own things that they got to protect too, given the pandemic just happened. So, I mean, I understand why they have that kind of money, but are some of those concerns valid from the legislatures?
Well, they are concerns that many schools share.
Okay,
and they're not new. I mean, I've heard about the endowment since I started covering high school sports in 2006. I've heard about it since then. And concerns that people have had. And again, it's not that they're necessarily, let me rephrase that. There is no evidence that they're doing anything wrong or fraudulent or anything. It's just the debate is, should they have that much money when, you know, there's some schools who are legitimately having to talk about cutting programs because they don't have enough money to fund them. And what the association will say, and there are plenty of people who agree with them, is, you know, it's not the role of the association to make sure that athletics are funded at every school. That's up to the schools and the school districts and the booster clubs and the General Assembly to fund public education. So, you know, that's their stance. What they do with that money, you know, they, again, there's an article in High School IT that breaks down some of this, but even this year in COVID, they gave back $4 million to the schools this year to help offset some of the lost revenue that they would have. They've paid for AEDs to make sure every school has an AED in their school. You know, so they do things like that. They're paying for coaches' education, reimbursing coaches' education, athletic directors' education, all kinds of stuff that they do that adds to the program. It's just a matter of whether or not people agree that the association should be doing that versus leaving more of that money with the schools.
Nick Stevens, High School OT, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovius. Julio is out today. You can read all of this on highschoolot.com. Okay, so I guess we can wrap on this as it relates to the North Carolina High School Athletic Association and, you know, the NCGA wanting to dissolve it and everything else. What is it about the Catholic schools that has people so in their feelings all the time?
Well, I mean, as you know, this isn't a new issue either.
No, it's not. That's why I asked it the way that I asked it. It feels like a good chunk of the issue seems to be with the Catholic high schools. So why is everybody in their feelings about this all the time?
So obviously, when you're a private school, you don't have things like a school district, right?
Yeah.
So it comes down to people perceive, some people perceive, that they have a competitive advantage over the traditional public schools who do have districts that they have to abide by. So in North Carolina, we'll just use Cardinal Gibbons as an example since they're here. Cardinal Gibbons can pull athletes from a 25-mile radius. Most schools can't do that.
Okay.
And then there's other ways that they can become eligible, like if they're a member of the Catholic diocese and their pastor signs a letter saying that they, you know, are a member of the church and all that stuff. And there's ways that they can get in and be eligible to play sports. And
yeah, so I mean, that's basic stuff too. Like my parents paid a discount at Cardinal Gibbons because we were members of the Catholic Church.
You know, like that's how
that works.
And so some people perceive that to be a competitive advantage.
Okay.
You know, there are some who have.
Of course, I'd say discount relatively speaking, Nick, because it's not like Catholic school is cheap. But that's neither here nor there.
Right. You know, there's other people who come up with other things. Like people throw around the word recruit all the time.
Yeah.
It is illegal for Cardinal Gibbons to recruit athletes, and no one has ever shown me evidence that they have done so, and they've never been penalized for doing it. So. I think that we need to be really careful not to use that word.
Yes.
Because it's not fair to Cardinal Gibbons unless you can prove it. They also cannot give athletic scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
That's another myth that's out there that people use a lot.
Now they can give for the record though, they can give hardship.
Yes.
You know,
but the cost of tuition
is not what a normal student would pay.
Correct. Yeah. Like a need-based scholarship.
Yes.
But they're not athletic scholars.
Right.
And they also have a practice at Cardinal Gibbons where if a student transfers from another school, they sit out of athletics for 365 days, you know, barring some sort of hardship or special circumstance. So, you know, there are things in place there and there are also built-in disadvantages. They don't have public transportation to get their students to school.
Nope.
Like you said, they have to pay a lot of tuition to go there. So, you know, I won't say one way or the other that they do or don't have advantages. I think every school has advantages and disadvantages when you're looking at athletics. But that is the kind of the general issue around the four parochial schools in the NCHSAA. And I'd also add, that's a concern that a lot of people have about charter schools in the NCHSAA too. And you know, that's another rabbit hole for another time.
All right, Nick Stevens. Yeah, I don't know if we have time to go into that rabbit hole. All right, Nick Stevens, highschoolot.com. If you're interested in this some more, by all means, go to highschoolot.com because you've got like blanket coverage of all of this going on right now. And I'll be curious to see how this is resolved here in the next couple of weeks.
Now, can you confirm that Julio's out making sure that the ACC gets a deal with the SEC to merge and make a super conference?
I believe what the ACC is going to do is that they're going to take over the North Carolina High School Athletic Association. That's the move. That's the future.
John Swofford is the new commissioner of the
NCAA. All right, Nick. We'll talk to you later, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
I like the idea to save the date. You know, 2025. It's going to be a big deal. Speaking of the Big 12 and Texas and Oklahoma, I'm not sure that Bob Bowlesby with his statement today actually knows that Texas and Oklahoma are, how do we say, irreplaceable.
Oh.
To the south, to the south.
Oh, boy.
Jeez. It's worth it. To the south, to the south. To the south, to the south. All your best teams to the league, to the south. When we're headed, we don't know. Just waiting on that conference vote. So keep complaining about that school, but you might want to call some other schools. And it's our name that carries this crew. So when we head out, you'll have work to do. Standing at the podium, telling us how your 12 will thrive. Talking about how we haven't been relevant since 05. You got me twisted. You must not know about us. You must not know about us. We could be in another league in a minute. Matter of fact, here's our statement. We're finished. Bowls Bay, you must not know about us. You must not know about us.
Yeah.
You can't find another us by tomorrow. Don't you ever for a second be forgetting. We're irreplaceable.
Anytime I can put Bowls Bay in place of Bay Bay, I will.
Oh, man.
I'll do
it. That's quite the thing.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.